Hello, I'm Simon Huebner, and welcome to Inside Asperger's, the show that believes laughter isn't medicine, but it can be therapy under the right circumstances. Prove that, I'll share a couple work stories. When I had an office all to myself several months ago and turned on Ali on Netflix, which I hadn't seen before, my boss, big fan of Ali, came in and said, "I don't know how these guys can fight and listen to trash talk at the same time." I said, "This game isn't in the history books, but it should be." Boss, who reads American history for fun, hadn't heard of what I was talking about. Apparently, trash talk started when American slaves were looking for a way to keep themselves entertained at night. With no knowledge of their history or families, no citizenship, no safety, and the only possessions were the clothes on their backs, they came up with the game to pass the time, which was at least two people going back and forth coming up with insults as quickly as they could. This game later turned into the dozens, snaps, clapback, yo mama, and also influenced every roast among friends or between celebrities you watched on TV. When it's formal or an event, it requires plenty of planning and preparation. When people can do this on the fly, like in a slave game, that must take a special level of misery. You'd have to have a mindset that I'm nothing special, and neither is anybody else. It's what court jesters did and what great comedians do now. I believe a comedian friend of mine posted this online a while back. Because while I didn't know that story, I was thinking like a comedian would 5 years prior. Same boss called off my name and I yanked off my headphones, paused the Marina and the Diamonds performance on YouTube I was listening to, or it might have been the late great Amy Winehouse, whichever, and answered the following question. I've spoken to a 13-year-old 8th grader who's complaining that he's being picked on and bullied. What's something he can do for himself? I said, is he complaining that the other kids are mean? Or is he upset that he doesn't have an answer for them? Because if it's the second one, start listening to comedy. Go on YouTube, watch classic bits and albums from the likes of George Carlin, Chris Rock, Sarah Silverman, and just keep going down that rabbit hole like every other YouTube search that we've ever made. Now my boss knew that stand-up comedy was a very productive obsession I lucked into. What neither one of us could predict was 2 weeks later when he said, the boy no longer complained that he was bullied and even got along much better with the other kids. That success made me think about gathering some underemployed comedian friends of mine and starting an after-school program for teaching bullied children insults called Create a Little Monster, CALM for short. I don't think it's far-fetched at all to start something like that in a world that uses violence to keep peace, but that's just my two cents. So how did I learn the secret for one kid to stop bullying? Well, it was a productive, happy accident that happened about a decade ago. I wanted to remember George Carlin's bit, 7 words you can't say on TV. I'm trying to keep the show clean, so if you want to know this reference, just go YouTube George Carlin 7 words. And I'll just come out and say it. You're better off YouTubing that than watching YouTubers who got YouTube famous. I've had a parent say they were cool with YouTubers because they didn't cuss. Yeah, they also missed out a bunch of story structure also. Like it's a bunch of nothing and trash jokes. Back to George Carlin. Really, after I listened to the bit, I kept going down that rabbit hole. Now, I had always liked funny things like everyone else, dating way back to being so obsessed with The Simpsons, I used to be able to watch 5 seconds of an episode and tell which episode it was, as well as watching South Park, getting away with that when I was 12. Bar bat mitzvah parties, I would have rather kept my friends occupied because it was just terrifying asking people to dance with me. Especially if it's a girl in slow dancing. For someone who wasn't supposed to be able to understand other people, I liked making my friends smile and laugh, even though I don't remember any silly things I said or did. But my tastes have changed since I was a kid. Or a teenager who listened to a couple Jackie Mason albums on repeat. Or was fascinated with Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn, where it seemed like comedians got to say whatever they wanted, while talk radio hosts many other people I knew were following did the same, except they took the world far more seriously. To avoid being serious all the time also, I turned to stand-up comedy. Aside from YouTube, there used to be a radio station in Atlanta that was solely for stand-up bits. If they had traffic and weather, I would have never turned the dial. This was almost a decade ago from the time I'm recording it. It's around 2012. And I discovered two truths the more I listened. I can't take myself too serious if I'm also laughing at everyone else's habits and jokes. And my brain started firing faster in conversations, and I couldn't explain why. Faster than if I'd watched TV shows, which were written by the same comedians who were in a writer's room, because that stuff's more structured. Stand-up makes you think faster. All I knew is that I had an answer in conversations that were just casual, whether or not I wanted to participate in them. Soon after, a family friend who's like an aunt to me and several others said, "You said that like a comedian would." So I tried it twice. First time I tried it, I riffed on other people's rednecks. If you're from the state of Georgia and have seen as many Confederate flags north of the Mason-Dixon line as I have, it's a little too easy to joke about people failing geography and American history. My second time I tried it went so horribly I didn't try it again for over 2 years. When I got back into it, my favorite hangout in all of Atlanta became the Relapse Theater, where one night the owner, a dear friend named Bob Wood, teaches improv among all the other sketch, other improv, and stand-up shows they had there, told me about how theater games were developed. A long time ago, there was a social worker named Viola Spolin, who worked with immigrant and inner-city children in Chicago. From how they grew up, these are some poor, extremely traumatized and disturbed children. What Viola Spolin discovered was that a theater program broke cultural barriers and helped the communication skills of the children she worked with. Her son Paul Sills saw this and said, "These would make great theater exercises." Paul Sills ended up being a co-founder of the Second City Improv. What is interesting about this is I've previously heard that academic research has also said their research has shown improvement in autistic people recognizing their own and other people's emotions. Now I, my friend Bob, or the Second City, figured this out without investing in a degree relating to autism or psychology. It seems like a high price to pay to turn my own life into a science experiment. I'd much rather record my opinions and old jokes in between studying for the LSAT I'll take in a couple weeks from now. I was also disappointed to read the headline back in June, quote, "Second City is trying not to be racist. Will it work this time?" End quote. Yikes. I want to give a special shout out and thanks to the Red Pill Players, a black improv group who gave me a lot of stage time when I was looking for it, many Tuesday nights at, you guessed it, Relapse Theater. I'll have you know, as someone who runs an open mic pre-quarantine and booked a few shows, a true open mic and equality in stand-up means anyone and everyone gets to show their tuchus, no matter who they are, and tuchus is your word of the day when you want to censor yourself with a sound further from saying tush. Now, as a matter of fact, last New Year's, during 2020, at the show I used to host, a young man who's a saxophonist at Juilliard, a talented young man named Kevin Oliver Jr., you can find him on Spotify or Bandcamp, wherever you find music, was in town, back home, for the winter break. His dad came out to support him at a show, watched four comics go up, and then write his name on the list also. No matter what happens in this crazy year 2020, Senior is still my father of the year, and even this decade. Anyway, until next week, I'd like to hear about some of your favorite outlets. What do you think were productive? And what happens when you move from one interest to another one? Feel free to email at insideaspergers@protonmail.com, on Facebook or Instagram at insideaspergers, on Twitter at Simon Says Funny. Thank you all for listening. I'm at almost 9,500 listens from all around the world, even as far away as Australia, Germany, many different cities around the U.S. I'm pretty amazed and I'm very thankful. I'll see you next week. Bye.